Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Now I got a rule, I can't stand still. I got a flaming heart, I can't get myself.
It was a very good year to be Led Zeppelin. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Coming up on the show, Critics Week continues with a look at the year in jazz. But first, rock historians may remember 2007 as the year when three members of the Police settled their differences, launched a top-grossing world tour, and were then upstaged by a single concert by Led Zeppelin. So it was a very good year for bands that broke up 20 years ago. But the kids were all right, too, and here to help us look back at the year in rock is Ryan Schreiber, founding editor of the taste-making music news site Pitchfork Media. Ryan, welcome back.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So let's stick with the mainstream just for a moment. You had the Police, Genesis, Led Zeppelin all reuniting, the Bob Dylan, you know, Todd Haynes movie, I'm Not There,
right.
the Springsteen album. Was it a good year for rock in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was an exceptional year for rock. For mainstream rock, it's a little harder to say. Like you said, you know, I think it was an exceptional year for reunions. It seems almost every year somebody, you know, some big band comes back. But I think, you know... Sir, I think the thing that I've been kind of surprised about in all of these reunions is that a lot of these artists actually manage to come back and really pull it off. You know, it's clear that they're, you know, obviously they're taking it, you know, quite seriously. But I think, you know, with somebody like Led Zeppelin or the Police, or you know, you worry that they're going to tarnish their reputation by coming back and not really being able to pull it off. You know, I saw a band, Television, the old punk band, in 2001 at a reunion show in Chicago, and it was devastating, absolutely the most, you know, it's really like the thing that you fear the most. And I think, you know, for these bands to come back and really be able to drive it home, obviously that's the most that anybody expects, you know, from them.
But is it frustrating in some level that, you know, the big rock stories of the year are all these bands from the 70s and 80s?
Well, you know, it is to a degree. I mean, I think you get sort of accustomed, or at least I have over the past, you know, decade or so, to the mainstream sort of... you know, those are the bands that everybody knows, and those are the bands that everybody adores. So certainly, they're the biggest stories. The newer, more or less established artists. I mean, who in mainstream rock right now can you talk about that hasn't already been around at least for a decade or two? Who's you know on that scale? You know, there's U2, Green Day. You know, a lot of those bands like that. But you know, the newer sort of mainstream rock bands coming up. I don't know, you know, it's, are we gonna feel the same way about Nickelback in 15 years?
Right. Will there be, you know, an Animal Collective reunion tour 30 years
oh,
from
I'm
now?
Oh, I'm sure there will be.
All right. Now, your own list of, your favorite rock releases of the year very much skews, as readers of Pitchfork would imagine, towards the indie.
Right.
As opposed to the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
Why is Panda Bear's Person Pitch your album of the year?
Well, you know, I love the record because it's, you know, I think something that I always look for in music is something that's a really unique experience, you know, something that I haven't heard done before. And that's really like a very key example, I think, even of the decade so far, of a record like that, that really just pushes pushes the boundaries and really strives for something new. Yet it feels very, very natural, you know.
So as if Panda Bear's band, Animal Collective, wasn't odd enough.
Right.
This takes it to the ne plus ultra of musical
oddity. Absolutely does.
All right, let's hear Comfy in Nautica from the album Person Pitch by Panda Bear.
Try to show me.
Comfy in Nautica, the name of that track, from Ryan Schreiber's number one album on his list of the best rock of 2007, the album Person Pitch, by the artist known as Panda Bear. We don't have to go too much further down your list, Ryan, to find the Deer Hunter record.
Right,
which
true.
You put at number three. A similar reason? Is this something that's unlike anything else that was out this year?
I think it's something that was unlike a lot of other stuff this year. It has more of a history, you know, and I think it draws from a lot of the earliest sort of independent music that I got into, or alternative music, the dawn of the 90s, shoegaze stuff like My Bloody Valentine, Slow Dive, Ride. But, you know, so there's an element of nostalgia for me, but it's also updated with a lot of sort of modern experimental or ambient sounds.
Deer Hunter is the name of the band. The album's called Cryptograms. The album is by the Atlanta, Georgia band Deer Hunter. The album's called Cryptograms, and that is Spring Hall Convert. We're speaking with Ryan Schreiber, the founding editor of Pitchfork Media, and looking back at the best of the rock albums of 2007. Now, we've heard two already, Panda
Sure.
Bear and Deer Hunter, and both of them have an older... I mean, Panda Bear, there's a clear Brian Wilson influence.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned My Bloody Valentine, certainly that kind of English shoegaze thing,
right,
with the voices buried in the mix of electric guitar, very clear in the Deer Hunter thing. By the way, another band, My Bloody Valentine, that has announced a reunion.
Right, exactly. At this point, it almost seems inevitable. It's like, it is an inevitability of something of the artists that everybody really cherished and really revered in their heyday. And I think it's because there is demand. There's a new audience that has never had a chance to see them, and everybody's really excited about it, you know? So it's, you know, I think people used to look at reunions as kind of like a sellout type thing, and now it's just sort of a natural progression. You expect virtually any band to come out and do it. And
except
nobody,
the Smiths.
Well, true. There are bands who won't do it, and that may be for, you know, reasons other than financial, but Morrissey's doing okay. He doesn't really need an excuse to come back, you know?
Right. Now, my question with, you know, referring to Brian Wilson, My Bloody Valentine, you know, the older sounds that inform this brand new music, is indie rock the dragon that eats its own tail? I mean, is there a kind of a cycling or a recycling of material happening?
I think
here?
All music really is a recycling of other forms, you know? I think that where you end up with new sounds is kind of in recombining various old formulas, you know, to kind of create something new. And I think especially the Panda Bear record is really an example of that, because he takes, I mean, if you listen to that record, there's house, like the rhythmic structures are sort of like house. There's kind of this build and release. Even though it sounds nothing like house music, there's a lot of dub reggae influence in sort of this echoplex kind of sound, and then there's Brian Wilson, and I mean there's a million things in it, and actually there's a list of influences in the record that spans, you know, people like Eric Satie, Arthur Russell, Talk Talk, and I think you can hear all of those sort of combining in the music.
All right, we're speaking with Ryan Schreiber and hearing some of his list, and you can view Ryan's full list and a link to Pitchfork's Best of 2007 picks on our website. And you can also vote for your favorite albums in our listener poll. It's all on the soundcheck page at WNYC.org. Now, some of the picks, Ryan, are, you know, a little more out there, getting into
sure.
the artier end of the indie rock. Tell us a little bit about Dirty Projectors.
Well, Dirty Projectors are Brooklyn-based. I guess they're a three-piece right now. It's really anchored by the front man is Dave Longstreth, and he kind of has a rotating cast of backup or people who contribute to his albums. And there are two girls. It's Angel. I can't remember their names exactly, but they. But yeah, right. Basically, what they're kind of doing on this newest album is something that they hadn't done before. He's kind of. I think the loose idea was that he was going to go back and kind of take inspiration from Black Flag's album Damage, the 1981 album, which was a hardcore punk album, and kind of from that recreate bits that he remembered from his youth from memory and kind of try and resituate it in a different context. And what he does with it is really unusual, something that I hadn't really heard before as well. It kind of takes... it's actually very, very difficult to describe, but one of the underlying elements is this sort of tribal kind of African sound that's coming back in independent music right now.
And the idea of not being faithful to the original, but being faithful to your memory.
Absolutely.
Of the original. Interesting. Right. All right, Dirty Projectors, Rise Above, title track of the album of the same name.
What we say, try to stop what we do.
Band is Dirty Projectors. Rise Above is the name of this album, which you'd never guess it from the sound, inspired by a classic Black Flag album of 1981. And it's on Ryan Schreiber's Top 10 for 2007, looking back at some of the best of the year in rock. And Dan Deacon, another on your list who might be a little outside
right. The
sonic mainstream.
Sure.
We covered his little tete-a-tete with Greyhound bus lines.
Right, yeah.
His inadvertent advertising
exactly,
for them, which got
right.
him mighty ticked off.
It did, I'm sure.
But let's talk about his music for a moment. The album Spider-Man of the Rings.
Yeah, it's. I think, you know, Dan Deacon is a very divisive character, partially because his music can kind of be very grating, and it's got this very tinny sound, and it's very spazzy. The vocals are totally manipulated and electronic. A lot of what I like about the record is not just the sort of visceral melodies and this extreme sort of sugary pop that you get with it, but also that it's, again, you know, it's sort of a newer sound. It's something that's uncommon. But his live shows as well, I think, have a very communal kind of experience where he's able to really, I mean, I've never seen somebody go into a room of just completely cross-armed, disinterested hipsters and within, I'm serious, within about 15 seconds of when he comes on, he just has a way of really getting people into it. He'll just talk to them for a minute, and he's really funny, and he's super charismatic, and you know that he's there to have a good time. And when he lets loose, everybody just goes insane, and you get this kind of ecstatic energy that you just don't really see at independent shows.
Well, and that can be a tough thing to capture on disc, but he's somehow made it onto your top 10 with this record.
Did.
The album is called Spider-Man of the Rings by Dan Deacon.
I'm gonna get my face on, I'm gonna get my head out of the-
Dan Deacon, the Crystal Cat, from his album Spider-Man of the Rings, number 7 on Ryan Schreiber's list of the 10 best rock albums of 2007. So, you know, with bands like Dirty Projectors, Dan Deacon, Jens Lehmann in a very different way, whom we'll hear next, are you hearing more receptivity on the part of you know, the indie audience to things that might have seemed a little beyond the pale not too long ago?
I wonder if it's more, you know, I think so. I think independent audiences have always been fairly open-minded in terms of independent music itself and the and its sort of boundary-pushing tendencies. You know, you can go back and look at, you know, at the history of independent music, and really that's something that's sort of been a common theme is bands who are sort of pushing things forward and kind of taking it to the next place.
Which is usually why they're on an independent label to begin with, right, and not on
exactly.
a major label. Now, we saw one notable sort of movement from the indie label to the majors this year, and that was Interpol.
Right.
But there was a lot going in the other direction, Radiohead most notably.
Absolutely.
Going completely independent and
right.
offering the pay-what-you-will plan.
Sure.
What do you make of, you know, the kind of the currency, the cultural currency of indie rock these days, where, you know, Dylan and Springsteen somehow become associated with indie rockers like the Arcade Fire and the Hold Steady?
Yeah, it's very complex. And I think really it's people who are looking for something. I think the sort of common bond between independent music listeners is people who are looking for something that is that offers something that the mainstream can't. And when you look at mainstream commercial music right now, it's very pandering and it's very dumbed down in a way really that it hasn't been, I think, even in the 90s and the 80s. I think it's maybe the most dumbed down that it's ever been. And so,
you know, I've been saying that. people have been saying that since the 60s and 70s.
Well, I think actually if you go back to the 60s and then see the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, you can see that it continuously kind of declines,
okay.
right?
All right.
So I think it's still valid. you know, I think people are just really looking for something that the mainstream can't offer or refuses to.
And Jens Lehmann, you know, certainly a good example. This guy would never find his way onto the pop charts.
Right.
Although it's very accessible music in his album Night Falls Over Cortadala. Jens performed some of these songs for us here in our studio on Soundcheck. We're going to leave it with a postcard to Nina. We've been speaking with Ryan Schreiber, the founding editor of the online music news site Pitchfork Media. His full list and the Pitchfork full list of the best 2007 releases are available on the Soundcheck page of our website, along with our listener poll at WNYC.org. Ryan, happy holidays, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me. That you want to love a woman. Nina, I can be your boyfriend. If it puts an end to all this nonsense. First time I see you in Berlin. You don't tell me anything until outside your dad's apartment.
Music from Jens Lehmann here, and up next, Critics Week shifts gears for a look at jazz in 2007. This is Soundcheck.
On trumpet paths, safaris to the heart of all that jazz. Through eye bars and girders, through wires and pipes.
2007 was the year of Joni Mitchell, jazz style. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Pianist Herbie Hancock's album, River, The Joni Letters, was one of the highlights for a great year in jazz. The album featured some heavyweight singers like Nora Jones and Tina Turner, and the Canadian bard Leonard Cohen, whom you're hearing in the background. The record is proof that even though jazz only sells a tiny bit of the total album sales each year, it is still producing some of its best music ever. That, at least according to jazz critic Will Lehmann, who writes for PopMatters.com, among other publications. And as we continue with Soundcheck's annual Critics Week, he joins us by the phone from Washington, D.C. And Will, welcome back to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me, John.
So you say River was Hancock's, I'll quote here, best album in decades, unquote. Why?
Well, Herbie's become, despite his incredible, you know, talents and his vintage as both a jazz player and as a pop guy, you know, playing great funk music in the 70s and then, you know, with that great album in the 80s that
Rocket.
Everybody's remember,
yeah.
Rocket. But he's become sort of transparent recently, I think, as a musician. He's been doing a lot of interpretations of other people's music, and his music has always sounded to me not smooth jazz, but sort of just thin. And on this album, River, he confronts a great body of songs by Joni Mitchell and really a friend of his, someone whose music he's played on her records, and I think he understands her music well. And just as importantly, he matched himself up again with the great saxophonist Wayne Shorter on a large number of the cuts. And the two of them together, along with some fantastic, harmonically interesting songs, produced an album that didn't seem transparent at all.
So, I mean, the list of guests, Corinne Bailey Ray, Nora Jones, Tina Turner, Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell herself, and, as you say, Wayne Shorter, you almost have to ask, who's the real star of this record? I mean, it's an incredible lineup.
It is amazing. I think what works really well, though, is that Corinne Bailey Ray, who sounds great, and she's got a great tone to her voice, Tina Turner, who I've never heard her sound more interesting and deep and sensuous than she does on the Joni Mitchell song here. All of these folks really came in playing over a jazz rhythm section. So it wasn't a question of Herbie Hancock making some pop music with Corinne Bailey Ray, mm-hmm. which wouldn't have been a bad thing, by the way. But it's really more like Corinne Bailey Ray coming onto his territory, matching her voice up against his original, his real piano style, and having to deal with a guy like Wayne Shorter playing in the background, playing around her, I think that raised the pop folks' game a little bit.
Yeah.
And yet it's still a very accessible record.
The album's called River, the Joni Letters, and it's mostly settings of Joni Mitchell's songs, although there are two tracks by Wayne Shorter, the sax player, one of which you're hearing in the background. And, Will, if we look at another generation of jazz pianists, Robert Glasper is on your list of the best jazz releases, a guy who seems to combine elements of Herbie Hancock with elements of Radiohead. Tell us a little bit about him.
Well, Robert Glasper is a relatively young piano player. He's got great, you know, jazz heritage and jazz vintage. He's the real thing. His trio is acoustic piano, acoustic bass, drums. So this isn't a guy who's, you know, combining his music with pop music in any of the obvious superficial ways, but rather a guy who grew up listening to not just rock and soul music like, frankly, most people in their 50s and 60s did, but this is a guy who really grew up listening to modern rock, hip-hop, music that was already omnivorous music that was combining different kinds of music into a single thing. You think of a band like Radiohead, and they're, you know, they're really collagists in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
So when Robert Glasper combines a Radiohead song with Herbie Hancock's Maiden Voyage and combines in the sound of his trio the sound of classic jazz trios from the 50s with the rhythmic feeling of hip-hop, you've got something that's truly integrated and I think genuinely new, not just a new sort of stitching together of jazz and hip-hop or jazz and soul music, but something that actually integrates them from the core of the group rather than just, you know, putting a rapper on top of a jazz group and saying that it's new.
Right. Well, here's a little bit from Robert Glasper's record called In My Element. The piece is called FTB.
Thank you.
That's Robert Glasper, young pianist who's making a big reputation for himself with his album In My Element. The song's called FTB, and that is on Will Lehman's list of the best jazz releases of 07. Will's on the phone with us from the Washington, D.C. area, where he writes for PopMatters.com, as well as NPR and other publications. And Will's full list is also on the soundcheck page of our website at WNYC.org. Is this new jazz, NU, you know, the kind of term that's been bandied about, at least here in New York, a little bit lately?
I guess it is, John. I mean, those kind of terms come and go, but I think that the idea of it really is that there have been a lot of musicians who have been trying to fuse music that still can live under the jazz banner but attract a younger audience, a hipper audience, an audience that I think has grown a little bit tired of jazz that's all about technique and chords and solos. And I think what's exciting about a Glasper's trio and some of the other music that's been lumped together as new jazz is that it's focusing perhaps a little bit more on directly going for a feeling and a little bit less on virtuosity as an end in itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
right.
Always a good thing in music.
Okay, so names like Matthew Shipp, Ethan Iverson of the Bad Plus. I mean, you know, it's kind of a loose tent, this term, but it is out there.
It definitely is, and I think that those names you mentioned are great. I teach high school kids, and they come in as excited about a new Bad Plus album as they do about the Radiohead album on Sunday.
Okay.
That just cheers you up in the morning.
All right, now let's go to another release, another pianist, same record label, Blue Note, and it's Kenny Werner, who's a real veteran, but this year made his first album for Blue Note. What made this one of the best of the year for you?
I'm a huge fan of this record because it combines the virtues, again, of time-tested jazz trio playing. In this case, you know, Kenny Werner, who's been leading trios in New York for a long time. He lives just outside of New York in the Woodstock area and is, as you said, a veteran. But on this record, he is combining his trio with two extremely interesting horn players, Chris Potter, who plays saxophone and bass clarinet on this record, and Dave Douglas, the trumpet player. And in addition, the album is produced by Lenny Pickett, and it's been given a sort of electric acoustic element that allows electric keyboards and some production work, some, you know, non-live production work, to fuse with the rhythm section in a way that is genuine and, you know, doesn't have that cheesy, over-glossy feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's adventurous jazz that happens to sound more like 2007 than 1957.
The album's called Lawn Chair Society by Kenny Werner, and you mentioned Chris Potter. He has his own record called Follow the Red Line, which is on your list as well, right, Will, of the best of 07?
Yeah, if I were going to give a Most Valuable Player award for jazz in 2007, it would definitely go to Chris Potter. He's a tenor saxophone player, also plays alto and bass clarinet, and he was just everywhere this year. He appeared on a brilliant live album by Paul Modian, live at the Village Vanguard. He released two records on the same day of his own that were wildly different and mm-hmm. both outstanding.
Well, and here he is on this Kenny Werner CD as well. Again, Lawn Chair Society is the name of it. Here's a piece called Lowe's Garden. Pianist Kenny Werner, Lawn Chair Society, his album from 2007. The song is called Lowe's Garden, and we're looking at some of the best jazz releases of the year with Will Lehman. And why don't we leave pianists behind for the moment, Will, and talk a little bit about Terrence Blanchard, the man who scored Katrina, in a manner of speaking.
Absolutely. Terrence is a New Orleans native, and he's been composing the music for Spike Lee's films for a number of years now. And he's relatively well known to some jazz traditionalists because he played with Art Blakey in his early years, and he's ventured out, as we said, into film scoring. And he came to write some music about Katrina because Spike Lee asked him to compose music for his documentary When the Leaves Broke, that was aired on HBO last year. And this led Blanchard to continue composing music and also to ask members of his quintet also to compose music for a record they made called A Tale of God's Will, A Requiem of Katrina. And what's interesting about this record is that in addition to very strong melody and very dramatic composition generally, it's also scored for a string orchestra by Blanchard. And normally these strings plus jazz dates are trouble. They sound like fake classical music, or they sound like jazz sort of gussied up and wearing a tie. This one sounds fully integrated, and it's beautiful.
And Blanchard actually conducted the orchestra himself, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, well, he's gotten more and more wide-ranging as his career progresses.
You also wrote that it contains some of the finest and most emotional trumpet playing we've heard from Blanchard. Let's hear some of it from Terrence Blanchard's album, A Tale of God's Will, A Requiem for Katrina. Well, you just have to take Will's word for it about the finest and most emotional trumpet playing, because we didn't get to hear any trumpet in that particular clip. Wading Through is the name of it, but there really, Will, is some amazing trumpet playing on this album, A Tale of God's Will, A Requiem for Katrina, from Terrence Blanchard. And just looking over the names we've covered so far, Herbie Hancock, Robert Glasper, Kenny Werner, Terrence Blanchard, all of them have been here in our Soundcheck studio, and for folks who want to hear more, you can check out our archives online at WNYC.org. Let me ask you about a final name on your list of the best jazz of the year, and that is Nels Klein, who these days is best known as a guitarist who plays with the rock band Wilco. But the Nels Klein singers, there's actually no singers in this band, are there?
It's just a trio, John, and fairly traditional, I suppose, in the sense that it is guitar, bass, and drums. But I think that, although the name of the group, I suppose, is witty and ironic, there's an element to which it's absolutely descriptive. This is a group of musicians who've been playing together for a long time, Devin Hoff on acoustic bass and Scott Amendola on drums, all guys from the West Coast. And they don't just play their instruments as fast or as intricately as possible. They take each composition and they really seek to sing it. So they play as a unit. I guess you could say they play more like a rock band than like a typical jazz trio, except that while there are elements of rock here, some really loud passages and some tremendously kind of funky and bashing passages, this is as much jazz as Charlie Parker could ever be. They improvise, there are beautiful harmonies, there's tremendous interaction between the members of the trio, and the Nels Klein singers are the real thing. This is not just Wilco's guitar player.
Let's hear a little bit from Nels Klein singers' record, Draw Breath. We've been speaking with Will Lehman, the jazz critic who writes for PopMatters.com and others. Will, thank you for being part of our Critics Week this week.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure.
The song's called Caved In Heart Blues. ¶¶ This is Soundcheck.